Good evening, my darklings. Legends and lore have shaped our understanding of the world since the dawn of time. From creatures that haunt the shadowed woods to sirens that beckon sailors beneath the waves, these stories whisper of mysteries just beyond our grasp. Tonight, we set sail into the realms of monsters, mermaids, and myths, uncovering the strange, the sinister, and the spellbinding. My guest this hour, Varla Ventura. She's no stranger to the fantastical, an acclaimed author and expert in the supernatural. She brings tales of terror and enchantment to life. Are these stories simply figments of imagination, or do they hint at truths hidden in the murky depths of history? I'm Dave Schrader. This is the Paranormal 360. We are your home for all things strange and supernatural every Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. I want to start off by recognizing the friends and followers, listeners that are in California dealing with the wildfires. So much tragedy has taken place, so many homes, businesses, towns lost. And I'm being sent photographs from people that live there, video. It's unbelievable. Some towns are down to two or three houses. And as they say, they look out their windows at what was once their fun, loving neighborhood is now reduced to something that looks like a post-apocalyptic movie, and it's heartbreaking. They are still in need of help, and you can donate to the Red Cross. Please do so. There are other organizations as well that are helping out. You can be a part of that. And I'm very proud to say that, look, at Scares That Care, right? The Queen Mary, the haunted Queen Mary in Long Beach, California, has opened their doors to become a location for people to go as shelter. So that is another great possibility for people that are out there. But just keep California and the good people of that state in your thoughts and prayers. All right, let's begin. Varla Ventura right here in the Twin Cities, live in studio with me. Varla, we've been buddies and talking for the last, 15 years, roughly, I think, on radio. It's good to have you join me in studio. And thank you so much for coming in.
What a delight to be here and be with you in real life.
Yeah, it's strange, right? We've lived in the same area for how long have you been here?
Eight, nine years. Nine winters.
This is our first.
Ninth winter.
I could tell you're from somewhere else when you count the years by the winters.
You do. You count your Minnesotan winters,
yeah.
Yes.
I've been here 37 years now.
So for you, it's all a blur.
Yeah. It truly is. I think that's because part of my brain is frozen three quarters of the year. But, I love looking at folklore. I love looking at the different stories. And it's interesting, as time has evolved over the 19 years of me hosting paranormal radio shows, everything was kind of compartmentalized. Ghosts were ghosts. Cryptids were cryptids. Fairies and pukas and all of that were in their own little realm. Now we're starting to see this bleed over where maybe the things we're encountering in haunted homes aren't necessarily dead people. They're not ghosts. Maybe they're elementals or the fae folk or something along those lines. And you're hearing all these aspects. Aliens also kind of take on the look of many different folkloric creatures, right? So are we simply looking at all of the same thing but naming it differently, right? Bigfoot has got 15 different names across the United States, from the wild hairy beast to the woolly booger, which is still my favorite of all the strange Bigfoot names, the skunk ape, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, everything along those lines. But is that what we're seeing in the rest of this realm, is that many of these creatures we're identifying as ABC, people are also identifying as XYZ, and now we're just seeing that intersection this far into the examination?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Probably been doing this about as long as you have. And I can tell you that when I first started writing about mermaids, there was a line in the sand that none of the ghost hunters would cross when it came to mermaids. But I absolutely think, and the more I have researched and the more that I know, which is, minimal compared to the vast information that is really out there for us, I've really begun to understand that we may be having the same experiences over and over again, and we're calling them different things, and we have them cross-culturally, we have them globally. And for example, one of the things that really struck me is that when I was researching my book, Fairies, Pukas, and Changelings, I was reading a lot about these sort of domestic fairies and these accounts of domestic, something that would be considered like a hobgoblin or a brownie that would be in your house and it would be taking something. And then it got a little darker and I got a little deeper in, especially into the Welsh folklore, which is fascinating. and you'd find, you know, a little bit of scratching. You'd wake up with scratches along the on your back or on your arms. And it began to sound with things moving across the room, which started sounding very poltergeist-like to me. And so I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. And then I was reading this book called British Goblins, which is by a man named William Wirt Sykes, who was the – he was an American who was the consulate general in Wales in about like 1800 to 1840. And now 1800 to 1840 in the U.S., all kinds of wild stuff was happening, right? But in Wales, much of the what we call the old ways were still very prevalent. And so he went there as a learned man, and he was fascinated by the Welsh culture. And so he went around doing something much like Yeats was doing in Ireland and the Grimm brothers did across Germany and Europe, and kind of gathering stories. And William Wirt Sykes wrote this incredible book called British Goblins. You can find it on Gutenberg, which is a free resource to find old volumes of forgotten lore. It's not widely published, but it is the most impressive volume on fairy and folklore and also old ways, like amazing old customs, like, you know, laying out sponge cakes at funerals and delightful, like, common customs that took place. Anyway,
he, now wait, at the funerals, were you laying them out for the fae folk?
On the coffin, you would lay them out. And you would, no, it was really more of a ritual. It was a little bit of the sin-eating type thing.
Oh,
so
okay.
Sin-eating being where you lay out food on the coffin or on the body itself, the corpse itself. And then you come, I'm just going to like lead in with sin-eating, folks.
Please.
But, you know, so you put bread or something spongy and absorbent onto the deceased body. And then frequently someone was paid to come in and actually eat that bread and eat their sins so that they could go into the afterlife clean. And it was actually someone's job. Like, he was a grave digger. It was usually some poor guy, right? It was like, give him a, you know, a coin, and he would eat the bread, and he got bread and ate the sins. Anyway, so William Wirt Sykes, he had this massive collection, and in that collection, there is a sketch of a puka. This is actually getting back to your original point, believe it or not. but there is a sketch of what he calls a puka, and I will tell you, that looks just like a gray. It looks like a sketch that I have seen of someone saying, this is what I saw when I was, you know, pulled from this planet. And it's got a big bulbous head. And this is from like 1810, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. So I guess to your point, yes, I think a lot of what we're experiencing has been experienced before, and we call it different things. And nonetheless, we don't know what it is. Right?
Well, or we do. We just have different names for it, right?
Like right.
The elephant parts story. Everybody sees it in a different way. Everybody's got a different perspective of what they're looking at. We have to take a break for people that are just tuning in. And what's a puka? We'll talk about what a puka is because I think those are great. If you've ever seen the movie Harvey with Jimmy Stewart, that's probably one of the best ways to get introduced to the puka. We're going to take a quick break. Varla Ventura in for the evening to spend both hours with us. This hour, we'll talk about the fairy folk and other strange legends and lore. Next hour, we'll start dealing with seances, hauntings, and ghosts. We'll do that right here on the very best in paranormal programming. I'm Dave Schrader. This is the Paranormal 360. All right, tonight we're exploring the world of fairies, pukas, changelings, of mermaids, monsters, and more. That's our focus for this first hour. The guest, Varla Ventura, she's a fellow Minnesotan now. She's been living in the state for 9 years, so we'll absorb her and keep her with us as long as we can. But she's got a lot of fantastic books out. We do have a link for it on today's program guide, or you can always check her out at varlaventura.net. That's varlaventura.net. You'll find more information about her, her books, and the projects that she's working on. So let's start talking pukas. What exactly is the explanation of a puka?
Pukas are one of my favorite members of the fairy kingdom. So just to back up for a moment, when I say fairies, I'm sort of talking about, I look at the fairy kingdom the way I look at the plant kingdom, which is much the way, like, For example, William Butler Yeats classified the fairy kingdom, very, very common in Celtic mythology, so that you have like these different branches of the Pooka. You've got kind of your like sea dwelling, your woodland dwelling, your trooping fairies who, you know, go along the roads and meadows. Among those are the Pooka. Now, you've been to Ireland, so you may have heard Pookas being referred to in general as like as a general term. I've run into many people who say, oh, my Irish granny, you know, just everything was a Pooka. So it can also be used as a general term for a fairy. But by my own definition and that of William Butler Yeats and others, the true definition of a Pooka is a trickster, shape-shifting fairy. So it's a supernatural being, of course, and it can take the form of several different animals. Most commonly, it is either a horse with usually a long black mane and glowing red eyes, or a rabbit. So your reference to Jimmy Stewart's
Harvey
is probably the best pop culture example that we have. Where Jimmy Stewart and his character Elwood P. Dowd sat and spoke to an invisible giant rabbit. Donnie Darko is kind of like the more, you know, the, right. the millennial version of that.
Much darker version.
Yeah, version. But the point with and the reason that Harvey really kind of embodies that is that Pookas have this tendency to prey on town drunks. And when I say town drunks, I sort of mean like a misfit, right? Like someone that is not going to be believed otherwise. So that's – if you're a trickster, the best person to prey upon is someone that kind of has a shady reputation anyway. So in the movie Harvey, for example – you know, he's sitting at talking to an empty bar stool, and he's constantly embarrassing his sister, and basically everybody dismisses him. And so whether or not he's actually seeing this Pooka becomes irrelevant because everybody dismisses that he can see anything at all because they just say he's a drunk. So Pookas love to mess around in that realm. And I believe that Pookas exist to kind of, I don't want to say set you on the right moral path because I don't really know what that is.
Right.
But I mean, that's subjective. But it's certainly to sort of wake you up. So Pookas themselves can cause absolute mayhem and chaos, but they are not inherently evil or trying to drive you off the cliff. Most often you'll run into a Pooka when you are somewhere you are not supposed to be. So maybe you're treading too close to the fairy well, or maybe it's a little too close to midnight in the Pooka appears, or maybe you were supposed to be home a couple hours ago and you stayed for one more round. And so the Pookas will sort of arrive. And my favorite Pooka story is very aggressive, is the story of a Pooka coming to you as you're walking down a lane, a country lane at night. And you hear a horse whinny from the pasture. And the next thing you know, it sort of flips you. It approaches you, uses its nose and its head to kind of flip you onto its back. And then it takes you on a midnight ride across the moors until you are sure you're going to die and be flung to death off the cliff. And yet, just before you're at that point of complete terror, kind of drops you off. And you're maybe just like a few, you know, a few houses down, just a little way from your door. And I think that like many tricksters in mythology and in the fairy kingdom in general, the Pooka exists to sort of shake you up. And then that's a great time to say, okay, I saw this thing and maybe I should, you know, maybe I should think about how I'm living my life and am I doing what I'm really meant to be doing on this earth.
Now, we've talked about through 19 years, tulpas.
A
thought form.
Sure.
Something that seems to take on a life of its own. Like you focus on, we brought up the Queen Mary. This is a perfect example. Everybody encounters the girl Jackie by the former first class pool. There is no record of a little girl dying there. There's no record of a child drowning in the first class pool. However, I do find this interesting. When Disney owned it as an attraction, the Queen Mary, when they were refurbishing the first class pool, one of the workers noticed what looked like a little wet footprint next to the dry pool.
Yikes.
And there kind of was born the ghost of Jackie, the little girl ghost. And then, of course, Peter James, the medium and psychic who used to appear on Sightings and many of the other TV shows, would have conversations. And there's recordings on film of him talking to the air, and you can hear this little girl's voice coming back. I have personally had experiences with Jackie aboard the Queen Mary, seeing and hearing her out loud and affecting equipment. And I often wonder, now, is this just a goofy spirit who's stepping into the role of Jackie? Tonight, Dave Schrader will be portraying the role of Jackie because he's a bored ghost, right? Or have so many people poured focus, intention, and belief that there is something there, but it's maybe a puka, maybe something else that's taking on the guise of what everybody comes here to see.
Yeah. Well, I think so tulpas are certainly, traditionally what a tulpa is like a shared visualization. Mm-hmm. Like if you look into Tibetan Buddhism, that's what a tulpa is. It's a group of people deliberately trying to manifest a shared visualization. And that concept has been sort of glommed onto in our community because we do have a lot of shared visualizations. And also we are dealing with so much unknown. We don't know what to call it. So again, back to what you said at the beginning, it was like, what do we call this thing? Is this a puka or is this a poltergeist? Like what's the difference? Are we calling it different things? And there's certainly the power of suggestion. I know for myself, the best situation I can go into is knowing nothing. Actually, hey, that happens a lot. but going into like a situation where maybe I've heard that something's hot, like a hotel is haunted, to go into it not knowing a specific story, I think can be very beneficial for me because I can sort of feel like, okay, I'm not imagining this exact thing that other people have put energy into. But certainly anytime you are putting a lot of energy into an idea or a concept, you can feed it. I think something like a puka doesn't really fall in that category because we're talking about going back into the folkloric record. Now, you've been to Ireland, and you know full well, you ask someone, do you believe in fairies? And they just kind of, a modern young Irish person will be like, that's like the thing of our grannies or whatever. But if you ask them to go on a certain road at night, or would they be willing to chop down a specific tree and build on top of it, they're going to say no. They're going to say no because there's a understanding that while we don't have all of the answers, we're going to hedge our bets and not mess with the fae.
And
right?
For listeners that are trying to scratch their head over this going, yeah, that's old legend and lore. In the 21st century, I think it was around 2006 when I began doing the show, we reported on a case from Iceland, I believe it was, of the city commission had to stop in the midst of building a road because they realized they came upon a troll.
Yeah, they take that very seriously in Iceland.
And then they were like, how are we going to – we need to revamp this. And we're laughing in the United States. Wait, you ran into a troll hill?
Yeah, because we're kind of jerks about stuff like that. I mean,
so
let's be real.
They're sincere. And when you go to China, they build buildings sometimes with holes in the middle of it because they don't want to interrupt the energy of the dragon chi that comes through those areas. And when you block those things, bad things happen. And you think, well, these are silly superstitions, but they're still relevant. You know, when I did my first trip to Ireland, we went on this ghost tour and our host was not having it. She just wasn't – she was like rolling her eyes at everything that we were talking about. But then at one point we had to stop on the road. The bus had to pull over. We all had to get off and go leave a token at a fairy bush because in order to go to the next area, you have to pass this fairy bush and we don't want to irk things. And I looked at her and I said, so you're mocking the bus full of Americans because we believe in ghosts, but we have to stop and leave something for the fairies. She goes, well, Dave, you don't have to. But I would suggest you consider it. And I'm like, all right. And so we all left something at the bush and moved on. But it was just – it's so funny that – right? It's just their concept. And as she – through the trip, after the first 2 days of the 10-day trip, she was like, oh, your ghost is what we call this or what we explain as that. Like the poltergeist scenario and the fairy and the – and it was so amazing. And then – during one of the trips at one of the castles, we're walking through the field to go to the sink, and all of a sudden, up leaps fairies in front of all of us, and everybody stopped. These things with the backlit of the sun, they were, I'm still getting the willies, fairies were floating above our faces and going around, and everybody's like, what is going on? And the tour guide's standing with this big smile on his face. So as everybody's kind of, I followed one, right? And I finally found it, and it landed on a wall, so I took out my phone and I took a picture. And what it was like a giant mosquito. Mm. And you could see the way its legs and wings were. So when it does leap up, its legs drape down, so it looks like legs.
Yeah.
It looks
yeah.
like Tinkerbell.
Yeah.
And when it's got the backlit of the sun, and he goes, I said, I got a picture of it. He goes, oh, you did. He goes, and what does it look like? I said, it's a bug. He goes, well, that's what they want you to think it
looks
like.
Exactly.
And I'm like, dude, I followed it to the wall. And he goes, sometimes you'll follow it and a rabbit will come out of the place that it just did, right? And I was like, what the hell? But it was really fascinating because I can see where that magic still exists in their eyes.
Absolutely.
Because this, for all intents and purposes, blew us away.
Yeah.
Fairies existed for that 3 minutes until Dave was a jerk and took a photo of the bug.
Broke the spell.
We have to take a quick break. We'll come back. Varla Ventura, our guest. We will talk about some more strange folklore. And I want to get into mermaids and some of these other weird creatures. Is there truth behind these experiences? We'll find out next right here on the Paranormal 360. Welcome back to the program. This is the Paranormal 360. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Varla Ventura. Tonight we're going to talk about some of the fabled creatures like, well, we were just talking about fairies and pukas and tulpas. Oh, my. Now we're going to discuss mermaids. I'm curious, you know, what your thoughts are on a lot of these creatures. And the one example that I came aware of this last year, which I thought was fascinating, and I wish I remembered the professor's name. He said, you know, we're so quick to dismiss things from the past. And he goes, I want you to consider one thing. Every culture talks about dragons.
Mm, yeah.
Every culture. And they have representations that look very similar to one another in different countries. And if you look at the Chinese calendar, there's, I think, 13 different things, or is it 12? And all of them are actual animals, monkeys, dogs, cats.
Year of the snake.
And then the year of the dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, you don't think that these things existed at one point, but yet you'll believe that dinosaurs existed? This is something that cultures around the world have talked about. And it kind of gave me that aha moment of, man, maybe we shouldn't dismiss things so summarily. What were they witnessing? And I know a lot of people say, back in those days, you're walking along and you see the remains of a T-Rex. To the people of that time, that's the bones of a dragon. But what if they were seeing dragons? What if they were seeing things that are still out there? And it was really kind of a mind blower to me. So when you look at things like mermaids, a lot of people want to pawn it off on the sea cow. What's that in Florida?
Manatee.
The manatees.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay. Listen, I've gone through dry spells of not dating. I've never once looked at a walrus and thought, "Wow, she is hot." So how is it that they could mistake?
It's from a distance, Dave.
How could they mistake a manatee for a gorgeous half woman, half fish?
Well, I mean, well, couple points there.
Uh-huh, please.
So first of all, you did have largely men's. Occasionally there were women, but mostly men at sea for long journeys and with a lot of nutrient deprivation. So scurvy and other, like, you know, things that would cause you to sort of imminently hallucinate. And then, of course, it would be from a distance. And the thing is you weren't going like, oh, I just saw a mermaid and I'm going to dive over. You were watching for mermaids because you knew that was treacherous water. And actually, Blackbeard himself was quite afeard of mermaids. And there were areas, especially along the southeastern coast of what we now know as the United States and down into the Caribbean, that he would order his crew to sail around because they were mermaid-infested waters. He was terrified of mermaid-infested waters. Manatees, on a practical level, manatees live in shallow water. They like it warm. Now, if you take a ship in shallow water, what happens?
She said ship, ladies and gentlemen. I just want to clarify that.
With a P.
Yeah. If you take a ship into shallow waters, you crash.
Right.
Right.
So mermaid-infested waters would also be the demise not only of your crew but of your ship. And it turns out that's how Blackbeard got caught. He got caught trying to moor up in the Carolinas in some of those shallow waters. So there's that element of it, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, like there's the, we do have a very logical part in which we will try and explain. We do this with all paranormal phenomena.
Right.
In which we will try and explain away what is happening. This is really a common response. I know anytime I've had a paranormal encounter, I don't sit there going, wow, there's a ghost in front of me. I sit there thinking, did I really see that? And the logical part of my brain kicks in. And the scary part, the part that sort of becomes more terrifying, is usually in the retelling. Well, it was a dark and stormy night.
Right.
And you're not going to believe what happened.
Uh-huh.
So in the case of mermaids, we have many different things feeding into what we kind of know as modern mermaids. But just to your point, I'll say that we have spent, and I say we as like, you know, a collective we, not every person has done this. And, you know, but I'm talking about like 2025 modern culture. We have spent a lot of time, and specifically white culture has spent a lot of time trying to disprove what the natives have been saying all along. And that explain away. And you see that even with Irish culture. You see scholars coming in saying, oh, well, you know, it's probably just was like a way to keep people close to the hearth. Now, I studied anthropology as a young woman and many years ago. And that was a big part of it. It was like these stories are told as a means to protect us. Just like I said, you know, stay away from mermaid infested waters because your ship will get moored. Mm-hmm. Right. We're going to draw mermaids here where dugongs or manatee lie. But really, spending that much time, you'll see this. And I study a lot of plants, and you see this constantly with plant medicine and modern medicine. Thankfully, in 2025, we have a big movement toward recognizing the folk medicine and the traditional uses of plants. And then we have medical students who are taking the time to prove what has been known by indigenous peoples all along from whatever culture it is. It could
right.
be Transylvania. It could be the United States. And being able to sort of show that these plants have the exact constituents that you can replicate and then they can, you know, fight cancer. So we do like to have our evidence. I think as a modern culture, we're all about the evidence. The problem with evidence is that it's subjective. You know, I mean, scientific evidence, it's less subjective, right? Here's my list of facts and here's mm-hmm. my list of figures. But evidence can be very subjective. And part of the beauty of, you know, the paranormal community is that we really can't, I mean, we're talking about the invisible. Occasionally we see
right.
it, but we're talking about the invisible. And so anyone who gets on their soapbox and says, I am telling you this is real or this isn't real, you know, they might want to like reexamine their own lives because there is no way of proving it. And that's perhaps why we're in it. We don't necessarily need to prove it. We just want to know that other people kind of are onto the same thing where we're onto.
And for people, again, let me, if maybe you're this many years old today when you find this out as well. I again, another one that just opened up to me last year, and I just happen to be searching around through articles, and I catch this article about the truth of unicorns.
Mm.
And, right, there's unicorns in so many different cultures, all these interesting stories, and, you know, it's been believed for many years.
Narwhals, the unicorn of the sea.
Well, that was one, narwhals, but they're also rhinoceros. And I'm like, yeah, but how do you make the mistake about a horse with a horn and a rhinoceros, which is ironhide? And then I was introduced to the woolly rhinoceros. Now, I've heard of the woolly mammoth.
Mm.
I didn't realize, but there was a period on our planet where the woolly rhinoceros, covered with long, thick hair and was allowed to survive in extremely cold, harsh weather, it had one giant horn, which is what unicorn means, right? One horn.
Unicorn, yeah.
And it was hairy like a giant horse. It looked like a beast. And I was like, wow, okay. So there is some historical relevance to the unicorn.
Right.
To creatures like this. But on many of the maps that these pirates and seafarers would create, they would draw strange creatures. Now we
the
know
Kraken.
The Kraken are the large squid, and yeah. there's now proof that that exists.
Yeah, they still, although the giant Pacific octopus has been known to pull fishermen down
mm-hmm.
to this day.
Yeah.
So, and then also you take into account colder seas, less explored seas, less hunted things. So things were allowed to get larger.
Yeah.
Large. And also we have in mind that ships were enormous. Now, if you've ever seen a replica of a Viking ship, it's not that big.
No.
It's pretty small and it's low to the sea. So, you know, a tentacled thing reaching up wouldn't be outrageous to imagine it pulling it over.
Even something like the Titanic.
You hear
the name Titanic, you think of this giant ship, and now you go on the Festival of the Sea ship or the Norwegian Pearl or whatever. These things are like 30 times the size of what Titanic was.
Yeah.
Titanic was nothing compared to what's out there now,
yeah, it
right?
was petite.
Titanic's a tugboat
for a lot
of these things. But it's interesting how our perspectives are so radically different. You're right. So something like a giant octopus grabbing one of the old vessels could easily do some damage.
Yeah, and also I think that some of these things were reminders of places that were sacred.
Sure.
And that you needed to tread lightly upon. You see that constantly in the plant kingdom. You know, poison ivy exists for a reason. It's there because you have treaded near something that's very delicate and can't protect itself. So if you're crossing a line where there's poison ivy, there may be a very rare plant just beyond that. So nature has a way of cultivating a protective barrier. And I think with...
And that explains why I have a very violent cat. I'm so delicate, it protects me from the outside world. We do have to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue the discussion with more right here on the Paranormal 360. Oh, darklings, if only you could sit in studio during the commercial breaks and hear the idiocy that goes on between me and the guests in studio. We're battling over, was it a fiddle made of gold that the devil showed to Johnny, or was it a fiddle filled with gold? And did the devil, in fact, play the fiddle that was made of gold? I say, no, that was the award, and that the fiddle he played was just a tricked-out fiddle, but, you know. Tressa, who's sitting in studio with us, is shaking her head and then told our guest Varla that she's stupid because she thought it was a gold she thought it was a gold laden fiddle. It's crazy. Hey, we're having a lot of fun. Varla Ventura, our guest tonight. She is the author of Fairies, Pukas, and Changelings, A Complete Guide to the Wild and Wicked Enchanted Realm. She's also written the book Banshees, Werewolves, Vampires, and Other Creatures of the Night, and Among the Mermaids, Facts, Myths, and Enchantments from the Sirens of the Sea. Now let's go back in and start discussing things like werewolves, vampires, fairies, pukas, changelings. Changelings, I mean, that's a kind of an interesting fascination. We talk about things here in the United States as skinwalkers, things that can transmute from human form perhaps into wolf or bear or eagle, these different forms. Changelings are kind of a different subset of the fairy realm that are, as I understand, they're kind of these strange fairy children that are just a little off.
Yeah.
So what they'll do is they'll swap. They'll grab your child and leave their child in its place.
Yes, fairy kidnapping.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that it doesn't even have to be a child. They could take you at age 10 years old.
Oh, or older.
Right.
Usually by 50, they're done with you.
Oh, so we just missed the cutoff for Tressa. Dang it. I was so going to look for a fairy circle to put her in.
You never know. I mean, you're a likely candidate.
She does look younger than 50, so we might
very
be able
cute,
to.
If very
we,
cute.
Yeah, and if the fairies leave like a shot glass full of Jameson in there, they're going home with Tressa.
Take me.
Banshees, werewolves, vampires, changelings, these all seem to fit into that realm as well, right? When you look at images of what Bram Stoker wrote about, he was not this dashing Hungarian vampire that we think of with. You know, Christopher Lee, Christopher Lloyd, not Christopher Lloyd, that was Doc Brown.
We love him, though.
Right. Peter Cushing and, of course, Bela Lugosi. It was more of a almost fairy-looking creature with pointed ears, tufts of hair. It looked kind of more monstrous.
Or Nosferatu.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we consider. So, I mean, do you think that the creatures like werewolves and vampires fit into a realm of the fairies as well?
Yeah, absolutely. There are many accounts of vampires in Irish fairy mythology. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. throughout the world, really. I think all of those in my brain, a lot of those things fit into sort of the, I always call them magical creatures,
right?
Because I feel like, you know, they fit in that world of the supernatural, but also it's interesting. Like, just going back to mermaids for a second, I feel like people are very willing to talk about vampires and werewolves. You know, we have the werewolf of Bray Road. We have the shapeshifters. We have the skinwalkers. And then you get into mermaids, and they go very, like, people kind of clam up and think maybe those aren't real. But in my mind, they're actually all in this other realm. Changelings are a little bit different, however. They are not shapeshifters. They are fairy switches. So you may very well have a changeling living among you. I believe there are a couple of...
I have 400 children, so there's a good chance.
Yes, there's very good chances. Yeah. Very good chances. There are a couple of modern musicians that I believe to be changelings. I'm just going to say it for the record. I think Tom York of Radiohead is a changeling.
Really?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Is that because you dropped acid at a concert?
No. I mean, listen to his voice. So a changeling... So basically what happens is a changeling, the fairies swap a baby. They don't just take your baby. They swap a human baby in exchange for your baby. And so there are many accounts of people raising these fairy-like creatures in the modern world, and they have a modern world, whatever, we're talking like 1800s. Right. And they have sort of a supernatural quality to them. You've met a person, I'm sure, that seems a little bit otherworldly, a little bit out of the anchored world.
Mm-hmm.
And they often have an extreme talent, like incredibly, in particular music. That can be a place where you can identify a changeling. Bjork, another great example, right? You know, she's just one of the Icelandic fairies. And but then in exchange, your child is taken into the fairy kingdom. And so you have a human child that is raised with among fairy beliefs, with understanding that they are also of the fae. And this can serve a lot of purposes. This can allow you to sort of move in between the two worlds. It can allow you to kind of hybridize and intermarry. And that actually was very common with mermaids. Mermaids were frequently, if you look at the folkloric record in particular, in Ireland and Cornwall especially, the idea of intermarrying with a mermaid was, I mean, you go to mermaids as well as selkies, which are shapeshifters that look like seals but can shed their skins and marry, like, it's usually female, and they can marry a human male, but he has to keep her skin hidden. And if she finds it, she has to go back out to sea. And there are countless haunting melodies about this. But there are people who are descendants of this, and they have supernatural abilities. And one of the best theories I heard when people say, why don't you see mermaids very often, is that during the witch craze in the 1600s in Europe, mermaids were hunted as well, because they are believed to also be witches. And so there were women who could shapeshift and walk on land, and then they would sort of be looked down upon in the town, because they were not going to church on Sunday. Instead, they were gathering seaweed on the shore.
Oh, crazy. Amazing stories. Varla Ventura, our guest. When we come back, we're going to enter the paranormal parlor. Ghosts, seances, and tales of true hauntings. That's next, right here on the Paranormal 360.